I'll just very briefly introduce myself, Bart Sheehan. I'm a clinical academic up in the medical school. I just noticed looking around the audience tonight that when I was invited very kindly to do this talk, I immediately said, oh, that's lovely, thank you very much, and can I suggest someone even better? And they said that we've thought of that person already, but they're unavailable due to a prior engagement. But I'd just like to say they're here tonight, and thank you very much for coming. And memory is a funny thing. But I'm just going to talk a little bit about something rather more, on one sense, mundane, but perhaps a directly practical aspect of memory, because my living comes from people whose memory fails. And what I really want to talk about tonight is what it's like when your memory goes, and when it goes permanently, because my raison d'etre is helping people with dementia. I work as an old age psychiatrist. I spent half my time out in the trust in hospitals in people's homes, diagnosing dementia, treating dementia, among a number of other conditions as well. The rest of my time is spent mainly with research here at the university, mainly clinical research, and I'm especially interested is how can we fix dementia? Are there drugs that we can give people which will actually improve their lives or improve their memories? But also, what is the experience of living with dementia? In other words, what happens to you when you've got dementia? Do you really suffer? People talk about suffering from dementia. The actual experience of people with dementia, I don't think, is properly captured by the term suffering, and it's one that I certainly avoid. So, at the coalface, I mean, people would be familiar with the concept of dementia. I suppose it literally means the losing of one's mind. But people often mix it up. They confuse it with with memory loss, as if everyone with memory loss has got dementia, or dementia is the same thing as memory loss. And of course, they're very different. Anyone who's got dementia or has a relative with dementia will be familiar with the attrition of the most important aspects of cognition, which happens in late life among people who have dementia. But memory loss is found, to some extent, in everyone who's got it. And thinking crudely, people have short-term memory loss and long-term memory loss, and it's the short-term memory loss that's often the first sign of this condition. So when I go to people's houses, which I do all the time, the relatives will say to me, look, he just keeps asking me the same question over and over and over again. It's driving me mad. Please do something or I'll have to put him away. That's very common. And I'll say, oh, absolutely, yes. And then I might say to him, and Sean, can you be my guinea pig? But I might want to test it out with some formal testing that people might have heard of. And it'll be things like, can you repeat after me, apple, table, penny? Have a go. Good. And then I'll distract Sean by going off and talking about something else, and then a couple of minutes later I'll come back and I'll say, Sean, what were those three objects that I asked you? Okay, well, there we are. I think we'll have to let Sean off the last speech, but Sean will almost certainly, in a normal state of arousal, come back to me saying apple, table, and penny. Yes. Well done. But people with dementia won't. They'll go, frequently, they'll go, apple, I just can't remember it. And of course, their short-term memory, their ability to retrieve things from stored memory, which is gone. They can get it in there, they just can't get it out. And late in the condition, we get long-term memory loss. And only yesterday I saw a patient, and the issue for them was, well, for their carer, was that his wife, the patient with dementia, just failed to understand anymore that she wasn't in her old family home from 60 years ago, and she would go looking and saying, why has this been altered? This corridor shouldn't be like this. And she got fundamentally lost in her own house where she'd lived for 35 years. And the same person, when asked, you know, can you tell me your children's names, no longer able to tell me. Something so ingrained, something so stored in their long-term memory, but they're no longer able to access it. And of course, there are laboratory tests for that. But in the end, I'm likely to come up with a diagnosis for people, and Alzheimer's disease is the most common of all these conditions. And really what families will want to know is there something that we can do about it? And the sort of things that we do are prescribe a treatment. Now, 10, 15 years ago, treatment was, textbooks of psychiatry or older people's medicines said Alzheimer's disease and dementia were untreatable, and that's no longer the case. There are lots of drugs available for this condition. A few of them are commonly used in the NHS. Importantly, there are billions of pounds in profit available to drug companies who could develop a treatment that was really effective, and for that reason, they are spending hundreds of millions to do it. It's a gamble for each individual product, but it's a gamble with a huge payoff. And we've got about 500 people in Coventry on anti-dementia drugs at the moment. That's quite a substantial number. It's about one in three of the population who might be suitable for it. That's pretty good for a UK average. But we do more trials. And in Warwick, an example of the kind of trials we do trials of exercise for people with dementia who are living in care homes. We're doing trials of occupational therapy interventions for people living in care homes. We're doing randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trials, which are a mouthful, but which are absolutely crucial coalface interventions for doing something to, in the long term, improve treatment of people with dementia. And this is attritional work. This is kind of coalface work. It's very hard work persuading people to be randomized into trials. And only yesterday, a carer said to me, a husband of a patient, said, "I don't like the idea that you don't know what the patient will be on, doctor, and neither do we. Can you please explain yourself?" And then I went into a long rigmarole about how it's only the double-blind placebo-controlled trial that allows us to really know if things work. And in the end, came to the conclusion and had to say to him, "In the end, this depends on your altruism, because it's too late to practically help your wife, but we may be able to do something for future generations." I'm constantly amazed by how willing people are to be involved in research which won't directly help them. Families and patients almost always are willing. Now, in terms of figures, there's a very high chance that you'll get dementia if you live long enough. We've got a very aging population. If you live to 90 years of age, there's at least a 20 to 25% chance that you will have a dementia. If somebody like me comes along and sticks their nose in and starts examining you at that age, very, very high chance. And far more of us nowadays are going to make 90 than would have been the case just 30 or 40 years ago. So it's a very real future that a lot of us face, a life without memory. In terms of other research that we're doing here, we do an eclectic range of things, and there's no point in listing them, but one of the things which is found is that people with dementia frequently are overlooked or bypassed or just regarded as they're infantilized in the process of care that they receive. We've done a lot of qualitative research with people with dementia to find out what is it actually like having this condition, and in particular, what's it like going through changes in care or being put in care homes for people with dementia. And the kind of themes that come out in that, and I've just brought a couple of quick quotes from that, are very, very common. A fear of loss of autonomy is incredibly prominent among people who've got these conditions. And these are people interviewed in general hospitals who are going to go into care homes. And then we followed them up a few weeks later to find out what was it actually like. And this 84-year-old lady, just before the move, said, "Well, how can I think? You need care. You have to do what you're told if I go in there, you know. You have to do what you do. You couldn't do what you liked. And you know, you're not like your own boss kind of thing. You'd have somebody over you. And so I'm just not thinking about it." Very common theme for people to come up with. But the same people, and this is not the same person, but a very similar person interviewed after the move, you know, what was it actually like when you did move into care? And a lot of people said, well, and this person said, quote, "Well, I was in my own home for over 40 years, and at first it did hit me. And then I thought, that's it. Forget about that house. You've got to start a new life. And I started." Very, very common resignation, a feeling that you just have to get on with it, a feeling that matters are out of your control. But not everybody is so sanguine. And the loss of dignity experienced by people with dementia through these kind of moves is often very profound. And one lady, an 87-year-old lady, after the move to residential care said, I think for me it was the secrecy. I don't like being pushed around and something decided for me. I like to be told what they're planning for. Yeah, perhaps I'm a bit weird. I don't know. I mean, if I had said, I'm not going, what would they have done? I knew it was for my own benefit, but it just wasn't discussed." Very, very common. People talk over them, around them. They talk as if they're profoundly deaf or as if they're idiots. People, you know, as if they have profoundly low IQ and can't have any contribution to the process of the move. So a lot to be done about that, of course, as well. I think I've talked about the word suffering as being something which is often used. Apocalyptic figures are often brought out into the public domain about how many people have got dementia and how many are going to have it in the future. I tend to object to the word suffering because the fact is I spend most of my life around people with dementia and treating them, and most people do not suffer. Many people are, by virtue of the condition, unaware of what's actually wrong with them. The dementia has robbed them of the ability to form a judgment about what's wrong, or they don't realize, they have no insight. And we often say, well, it's really great if patients have insight, and it's often not. It could be profoundly demoralizing to know you've got dementia. I think the carers of people with dementia suffer a great deal, and they probably suffer a lot more. And as the condition advances and the deficits become worse, the person becomes less and less aware of their own problems. Their carers are likely to become more and more aware. And that does not apply ubiquitously across the board, but I think the idea of people suffering is a slight misnomer. In the end, if we're going to persuade the government to do things which are important for those people whose memory has really failed, and it's failed in a way that will never come back, what are needed are good quality control trials. They have diabolical titles like a double-blind randomized placebo-controlled trial of donepezil and memantine for late-stage Alzheimer's disease. Bit of a mouthful. That kind of thing is important. It costs £3 million. Warwick is just one of 15 centers. We're going to recruit 800 people over a period of years. It takes at least 5 years from conception to any results, but those results could really matter. And just a significant difference between one or two of the true treatment legs can persuade the government to roll out this intervention for many tens of thousands of people, and it'll persuade something called NICE, the National Institute of Clinical Excellence, to relax their rules about anti-Alzheimer drug treatment. There's no way around doing this kind of slightly duller, less conceptual, less abstract work compared with my colleagues, but I hope it'll make a practical difference for the lives of people who are currently old, and looking around here, some of the people who are approaching old age and are at real risk of their memory failing. Thank you.